Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a very, very accomplished professional manager from Singapore, Disha Goenka Das. Disha, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Disha is the Regional Marketing Director, Asia Pacific for Twitter. She's worked for Google for 10 years. She was recognized as Campaign Asia's 40 Under 40. She's a lover of dogs, and she's setting up a philanthropic organization, which we'll speak about. So, Disha, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your career or your life?
I think the first one definitely is, I think when I joined Google straight out of college back in 2005, mm-hmm. that was a pivotal point in my career where I was deciding what I really want to pursue. And Google had just opened their offices in Hyderabad, India at that point in time. And I was one out of two to be recruited from my college. And I think it's really changed my trajectory, both personally and professionally. So I really count on that as one of the key, I would say, pivotal moments in my life. Mm-hmm. I think the second one is I've been very fortunate to have career chapters across many countries in the world. So I think it's hard to pin down which country I would say is the key milestone, but I think my experience in Australia and specifically Brazil and Singapore has helped me gain a very diverse and international outlook. So really thankful for that experience. And the third one I would say is more, I think, on the personal side is as you mentioned in your introduction, I am an ardent dog lover. So when I became a dog parent to my little four-year-old right now, golden retriever called Lola, I think I just don't imagine life without her. I don't know what we did before her, actually. So I think those would be my three, I would say, key milestones.
How different these are from so many people I've heard. So let's talk a little bit about Twitter. Mm-hmm. You know, you said that you are responsible for creating Twitter's story and its raison d'etre for consumers and businesses in the region by activating and amplifying the best of Twitter. Mm-hmm. Help me understand this.
So at Twitter, a lot of businesses and consumers alike, whether we meet, you know, friends at a party or brands that we work with, one of the number one question that comes up is, why do we use Twitter? Mm-hmm. As a marketer and as someone who uses Twitter quite every day, actually, mm-hmm. my job is to help consumers and businesses understand that mission. So you might ask, what is that mission? Mm-hmm. So the mission for us is to actually serve the public conversation by democratizing speech globally. Mm-hmm. To put it more simply, we help amplify voices and almost give a table or a mic to voices everywhere around the world, especially the marginalized ones. So my team and I work really hard to create campaigns that help consumers understand that Twitter is what's happening and what people are talking about all around the world. Hmm. And this is a place for brands to come if they want to interact with audiences, to launch something new or to connect with whatever is happening around the world.
Hmm. Fascinating. And, you know, tell me, for a very, very high profile brand like Twitter, as a marketer, what goes into, you know, building and sustaining Twitter as a brand?
It's a very, very important question. And I think the answer keeps evolving, to be honest with you. I've been with the platform as an employee here for 7 years. Hmm. But the one, I would say, trait or thing that really stands out for me is agility. Okay. I think technology around us is changing. Consumer behavior around us is changing. So as a marketer, I feel like being agile, number one, and also staying true to the purpose of the brand internally for your employees and also externally is absolutely critical to maintain a brand like Twitter.
Very interesting. So, you know, I use Twitter quite a bit and I have a reasonably large following on Twitter also. And I've often said, because I write a lot, I've often said this to a lot of my senior journalist friends, that when I was growing up, I had to form my opinions based on the opinions mm-hmm. of superstar journalists.
Right.
Now, thanks to Twitter, I'm able to form my own opinions and express my own opinions. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure as Twitter, you must be facing a lot of challenges. Can you talk about some of the challenges you face?
Absolutely. So I think, see, it's the health of the conversation on the platform is, I think, top of mind. And this is nowhere to hide from in terms of the toxicity we sometimes see on the internet. And Twitter is no stranger to it either.
Correct.
So I think from our perspective, making sure that the platform is safe for healthy conversations is absolutely critical.
Mm-hmm.
Have we reached a point where I can say that we've been successful? I would say it's an ongoing journey and progress can never be fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
But we are using, I would say, a combination of product,
mm-hmm.
People, and also policy to ensure that we're always amplifying positive conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And catching toxic ones as soon as we can that need to be looked at.
Okay. And you must
have a
large number of people who are constantly monitoring, of course, technology we are using. But mm-hmm. there must be human intervention every time someone appeals and say, why have you done this to me?
Absolutely. So we have escalation processes in place. The teams are called trust and safety teams. Across, I think, most tech companies have these teams that are monitoring a conversation on the platform, and depending on the kind of escalation, we do have manual intervention as well.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried to, I think the industry at large, the internet industry has tried to use technology to work on this as fast as they can, but there are always loopholes and broken windows, so manual intervention is almost always needed in some cases as well.
Very interesting. And you know, when you look at Twitter, what are some of the core values that you believe in at Twitter?
At Twitter, okay. So I think for us, it is as an employee. I can talk about it as an employee.
Oh, sure.
So I think I've always been in the tech industry, but I think what I value a lot about Twitter as an employee is, number one is transparency. I think the organization from top down leadership, we are a very transparent organization when it comes to decision making and any policy making, and it's at all levels of the organization, which I haven't really seen before, which I think is what empowers individuals like myself and my teams to really put their best foot forward, and also helps with innovation. So that's definitely, I would say, like probably one of my favorite core values. The second one is we're a very employee-centric company. I think leadership in the company at all levels is super empathetic,
mm-hmm.
And very, very employee-centric when it comes to, for example, I can give you an example from last year when COVID-19 hit.
Mm-hmm.
We were one of the first companies globally across industries back in like early March to have the work from home.
Wow.
Before anyone else did. We called it early, we sat with experts, and Twitter is always making decisions keeping employees center. We also took decisions like, given all the uncertainty with COVID-19, for example, we said we will not be doing any professional ratings as of 2020, because everyone's individual situation is different.
Mm-hmm.
People with families, people taking care of loved ones, everyone is in a unique situation. So we don't want people to feel the pressure
mm-hmm.
of needing to succeed and to meet certain ratings when life around them is so unpredictable. So it's almost putting the employee in the driver's seat and letting them choose how they want to work. A lot of people chose part-time work, and I think it's very progressive for a company like Twitter to set industry standards like that. So I think super proud of that as well.
Fantastic. And for someone who has been in technology, as you said, for a very, very long period of time, and very long period is very relative, I mean, you know,
yes.
So please don't misunderstand that. What would you say is your leadership style?
My leadership style, I think I would describe it as very open. Impact-oriented, and I also call myself a silent leader.
Mm-hmm.
I think I love seeing my team succeed, and I am always looking for opportunities to prop them up, whether it's internally or externally. I like to lead from behind, but I also want to make sure that I'm always there should they need me.
Okay. And, you know, when you are hiring people,
mm-hmm.
what do you look for in them?
So hiring is, this is something that I think two things I really value. The first one is diversity in thought and background. Mm-hmm. And I think this is both, these are both very, very important. In my experience, people who come with different backgrounds and different life experiences naturally come with their own worldviews. And this helps teams come up with creative ways of problem solving sure. that you would not see otherwise. Mm-hmm. The second one is will before skill. Mm-hmm. I really believe that organizations, irrespective of which industry you're in or which functional area you're in, mm-hmm. need athletes today. Okay. Who are highly adaptable and motivated to bring their best selves to work, because work as we see it and the industries that we see it are evolving as we move forward. Mm-hmm. And we need athletes in order to succeed, and great attitude is absolutely instrumental.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So let's move on and let's talk about, I want to come to your philanthropic organization, but let's talk a little bit about gender diversity. Mm-hmm. You have reached right to the top in Asia Pacific, and I'm sure there's much more ahead waiting for you. But yet, in a country like India, mm-hmm. gender diversity, while the government has mandated, I've spoken to several women, and they still say still a lot of work needs to be done. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts, and how can the imbalance be corrected faster?
So this is a topic, as you know, Ashutosh, very close to my heart. And I think taking India as an example, I agree with the statement you've made that especially looking at India from like sitting in Singapore, mm-hmm. I do feel like the imbalance is far greater. And it sometimes surprises / shocks me when we're putting together as marketers, panels, etc., when there aren't enough women in leadership positions in India. It's counterintuitive to what you otherwise believe. I feel like organizations in India or in markets like India, everywhere actually, need to be committed to driving change. And this is not just like lip service in terms of hiring somebody at your leadership position and that's it. But the change needs to be right from hiring, truly seeking out diverse candidates, having diverse panels, for example, when you hire, mm-hmm. equitable compensation when the person gets hired, and also making sure that they thrive once they join the organization through a very fair and transparent talent planning process. So the entire cycle needs to be something that an organization needs to care about, and not just hiring someone and saying, tick, we've done this. Mm-hmm. How can the imbalance be corrected faster? I think speaking from experience at companies like Twitter, I feel like businesses need to be radically transparent so they can be held accountable on their representation targets. I think Twitter does a really good job at this. And of course, there's more to be done. But we remain steadfast in our efforts to achieving our vision for 2025, which is at least 50% of our workforce will be women. And we release an inclusion and diversity report. In fact, we released one just last year, an annual one, where you can see us and how we are tracking. And this is something that's public. I feel like more organizations need to do it, so it becomes table stakes and not something that's a nice to have.
Mm. Interesting. Because someone called me the other day, mm-hmm. a friend of mine, and he said that, I'm for this 5,000 crore company and I need, can you help me find two women directors? Mm. So I said, I have lots of friends who would eminently qualify, but tell me one question. Do you want them because they're women or because of their mind?
Right.
So he says, no, I've got to meet this government obligation. I said, then I don't know anybody who will agree to join your board.
Absolutely. So that is the mindset that you see in a lot of companies, unfortunately.
Mm. Very true.
And then once you hire someone with that in mind, again, going back to my previous comment, it's very hard for that person to succeed in that environment.
Very true. Very true. Well said. So, Disha, let's now talk about your philanthropic organization mm-hmm. And your love for dogs. I don't know if the two are connected, but I love to hear about it.
Yes, they are connected. Okay. So I would say in the last, couple of years, or maybe 2 or 3 years, my husband and I have decided that giving back does not need to wait until the end of our careers.
Absolutely.
Which is what we generally we see with people. Like, for example, the most recent example is Jeff Bezos and what he did. which is amazing. But we started talking a lot about how do we do this as a parallel stream throughout our lives. And not something we think about once we feel like we've reached at an apex level and now is the time to give back. And with that in mind and thought process, we decided to start a foundation. It's called Sangam. And we identified 10 themes that both my husband and I are very passionate about. So dogs is one of them. So dog shelters is something that we support. Veterinary is another one that is very close to our hearts because we've seen how disparaged veterinary support is depending on the countries you're in. We're also looking at themes like diversity in media. Gender equality is one of them. Supporting schools, supporting local artisans. So these are just a few examples, and we've identified 4 to 5 organizations across the 10 themes that we want to support over the next 5 to 10 years to begin with the ambition of substantially moving the needle when it comes to their missions. Okay. And our vision is not just to support them financially, and this we can do by ourselves and also by introducing them, for example, to our network, mm-hmm. but also by giving time and helping them through upskilling, by creating new partnerships and revenue streams for them.
Okay. And go ahead. I said, which are the countries you currently work in?
Currently, we're working in Singapore and India.
Okay.
So I think COVID kind of put a little bit of a stop in terms of us trying to do stuff in person. So we've been mainly meeting them online and helping them financially. But we are hoping that towards the end of this year, when things get better, we can do more in person as well. I think the initial response has been amazing. We also are deeply connected with founders of all of these NGOs. So we really want to make sure that there's a meaningful difference that we can have instead of us just contributing an X amount of money over every month, for example.
You know, I must remember to introduce you to someone I'll be interviewing who runs an organization called Doggy Dabbas.
Oh.
And her entire focus is to manage nutrition for dogs and improve their health.
That's amazing.
So I must introduce. She's in India.
That's amazing. Please do introduce me.
I will. I will make an email introduction to you. But you know, staying with your philanthropic organization, one is the part about the animals, that is the dogs. But you also spoke about gender diversity, etc.
Gender equality, yes.
Gender equality. How are you doing something on gender equality through an NGO or through a philanthropic organization? In India, what are you doing there?
So the work on gender equality, what we've started, is actually first in Singapore. So there's an organization here called Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm. And they work with students from the ages of 6 onwards, mm-hmm. and to help them and train them basically on various soft skills, mm-hmm. or think of them as leaders for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And they are always looking for volunteers in order to train these students. And so this is one aspect that me and my husband have been spending time with them in terms of creating curriculum. Mm-hmm. Where are the gaps in terms of where we can help and where can we introduce our network to help, for example. So that is an example of an organization for that particular team.
Okay, very interesting. So I'm now going to move to the last section of our conversation, Disha, which are some mm-hmm. questions for you personally.
Sure.
My first question is that someone who's achieved so much and who's got so much to look forward to in life, as from where you stand today, what does success mean to you?
I think success for me is knowing that my professional and my personal efforts are helping create a positive impact in the world. Mm-hmm. Whether it is, you know, building my team, for example, and seeing them succeed and building teams across industries, mm-hmm. or it could be building organizations, which can be, for example, personally through the philanthropic endeavors we are looking at, mm-hmm. or also through the organizations we work with professionally.
Okay. And a follow-up question for you is that who or what inspires you?
I think I'm going to sound probably really cliched on this one, but I think I really truly believe that if one is looking for inspiration, you have to kind of open your eyes and observe what's around you. I find inspiration in a book. I find inspiration listening to music. I find inspiration listening to a podcast. Okay. I'm inspired when I play with my dog. So I feel like inspiration is really all around us, and we need to know when to seek it and how to seek it.
Very nice. My next question is that if you, Disha, were a role model to millions of children who closely followed you and your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
This one is a hard one. I think I would stop trying to be a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. In every aspect of my life. I would definitely be kinder to myself. Mm-hmm. And be more patient and let things play out.
Very nice. Very nice. So I've got time for two more questions for you. My next question to you is on failure. And, you know, I have a new book coming out on failure in 2 days. And my hypothesis for a long time has been that most parents in India or South Asia or Asia don't teach children it's okay to fail. Mm-hmm. It's always come first, go to the head of the line, etc. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns. Mm-hmm. Yet we fail. My question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
I completely agree with you, Ashutosh. I think inadvertently, like growing up in India, I think because of the way the school system is, and also I don't think it's probably something that's top of mind for parents as well, but I grew up with the, I guess, the notion that I always have to succeed. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I thankfully did when I was like in school, etc. Like I was always among the top 1% of my class, whether I was in school or in college. And like I mentioned, like, you know, even when I got into Google, etc. So I, for the longest time in my life, I was very scared of failing. So I think my biggest learning is to embrace failure. And I have made mistakes, both in my professional life and in my personal life. And I think what I've learned from them is, number one, not to be afraid of it, because I feel like it makes you stronger. And I think I'm a better person because of a lot of the mistakes I made. And the other one is, I think, don't be so risk averse, like take risks, be more proactive. And you will not do any of that if you're too afraid to fail.
Fabulous. And my last question to you, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation. What would your advice be to a young individual starting off on her or his journey in the corporate world?
I think for me personally, what has really helped me over the years, I feel, is learning and structured, continuous learning. Whether you are entering the corporate world right now, whether you want to be a manager, it doesn't really matter what field you are in. Mm-hmm. The speed of change in the world is so dramatic today. It requires sustained and disciplined effort in order for one to succeed. So I think one should never forget that and make learning almost part of your DNA, and however that might be. And I think the other one is, as a professional or as a manager, I would say is always lead with empathy, trust, and kindness. And that is what will see you succeed in the long term. And yeah, I think those would be my two.
Fabulous. Disha, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I really loved all the anecdotes you shared with me when it came to Twitter and about your philanthropic organization. Thank you again very much and wish you good luck.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. I really enjoyed talking to you as well.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.